Yeehaw, everybody. This is DJ Louie here dropping a snippet of our latest Pop Pantheon All Access episode, which, as you can imagine, is an in-depth look at Beyoncé's 8th studio album, Cowboy Carter, which dropped last Friday. Myself, Russ, and the incredible Danielle Amir Jackson got together to break down everything about this record, and I'm playing a quick snippet of it here. If you enjoy this discussion and you want to hear the rest of this episode, plus weekly bonus episodes of the show and so much more bonus stuff, you can go to patreon.com/poppantheon or click the link in the show notes of this episode. And if you just want the audio only of the bonus episodes, you can subscribe directly in the Apple Podcast app. So here is a snippet of Danielle, Russ, and I's conversation about Cowboy Carter.
All right, we are gathered here this morning to discuss Beyoncé's brand new album, Cowboy Carter. We have a very special guest, Danielle Amir Jackson, who is the editor-in-chief of Oxford American. Earlier this year, Oxford American put together this incredible collection of stories that chart both the historical and the contemporary contributions to country music from Black artists. It's called Black Country, A Love Letter and Living Archive. She's also working on a book about women and the blues. Danielle, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
And of course, Louie is here too. Hi, Louie. Happy Beyoncé.
Happy Beyoncé. I definitely do not have as illustrious a list of credits as our guest does today. So I'm very happy that I'm here with both of you to talk about an incredibly dense and sprawling body of work that we've only had, 3-4 days to process. I think only thing I'll say as my little intro is, please allow us that grace. Like, we are just still processing this. This is obviously the type of album that's going to unfurl itself over time, I think. I think that's how it's meant to be perceived. So I would say this is our first reactions, our initial gut punch about how this record has landed more than anything else. Would you both agree with that?
I would absolutely agree. And to take that even a little bit farther, I think even more than her most recent albums, this one requires and like demands of us long form listening and like digesting, maybe even in chunks, to really understand what all is there, the layers and the different movements. But I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, it's almost like when you study James Joyce's Ulysses in college and then you have to also read a secondary compendium that like helps you understand what's happening. I feel like this album begs that in some ways.
For sure.
So of course, this is the second part in what is to be a trilogy. The first part is an album that we have discussed ad nauseum on this podcast, Renaissance. To take us back to that first point in this new journey of Beyoncé, Danielle, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how that album hit you, how you experienced it, and maybe sort of where you're sitting with it today or where you were sitting with it going into listening to part two.
Sure. So we got a little bit of information from Beyoncé on the launch of Cowboy Carter, right? We got a bit of a press release. And even before that, she wrote that long, but also really beautiful Instagram caption about what inspired, moved, and kind of instigated this deep dive that she was going to do in this type of music. And so we understood this as a follow-up to Renaissance, but we also got in that background, very detailed background information that she provided us with, the knowledge that she had recorded the songs and started putting together the body of work for Cowboy Carter first, before the songs for Renaissance and the project came together, and that she had in fact planned to release Cowboy Carter before Renaissance and just felt that energetically the world needed to dance, is essentially what she said. So that gives me just a lot of information. I think that's really helpful in processing the kind of project this is and how different it is from Renaissance. Initially, when Renaissance came out, I just was really stunned and astonished and in love with the flow and fluidity and the conciseness, the tight conciseness of its mission statement, of its sonics, even just formally the way every single record blended so easily into one another, how the moods, you know, there was a little bit of modulation up and down, a little bit of a lull for some down tempos. But for the most part, there was one fewer pitch cathartic exhale over that album. And, you know, even from that first single came out, Break My Soul, it was just a very clear mission statement. Like, we need to dance, right? So let's do that. I thought it was light. It was buoyant. It wasn't quite apolitical, but it wasn't political in the sense that some of her music and visuals for around 2016, around the Lemonade era were. For the most part, it was a light, house light, but a very danceable, cathartic groove that was sustained through the album. There was pretty high, almost universal critical acclaim for Renaissance. I did notice, so for what it's worth, Pitchfork rates it higher than any of her other studio albums. And then a lot of the critics I really looked to in understanding and processing that moment, which, you know, she definitely said was an homage to queer culture and the culture that queer innovators created in the dance floor. So there are queer culture critics of color, such as Lene Denise and Craig Seymour, that I looked to in processing the album, who really loved it. As always, there's a subtext of her samples, which you can read those alone to understand what she's up to, I think. And that's been the case for many of her most recent projects. But, you know, somebody like Donna Summer, Tina Marie, incorporating kind of those queens of the dance floor, it was quite clear all the samples aligned, all the just the actual sonics and the mission, they all seemed to align. We also knew that there was a clear heartfelt motivation and that it was an homage to her Uncle Johnny, a queer man who helped her mother, was essentially her nanny, her godmother, create all her early costumes with her mother, Miss Tina. You know, so there was heritage and culture, but it was overlaid on top of this interest in queer dance floor cultures and for people to release and for her to release and just to have a really good time. All that converged into this really just one single cathartic kind of statement that I just really loved the unity of it. It was just a unified album and collection of experiences.
Yeah, I was thinking so much actually this weekend about the ways that this record like is in conversation with Renaissance, but I think more surprisingly upon hearing it, the ways that it's different. I think going into this, because this has been framed as this triptych, I was primed to like think about the ways that this was building on the project that Renaissance started. And of course, I think what many people are sort of assuming here is that part of this project is about Beyoncé reclaiming or doing genre exercises that sort of reclaim genres that are historically rooted in Black culture and have had a white face put on them over the course of the century or the last, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, if you're thinking about Cowboy Carter, or longer, I guess, and recentering a Black voice in the center of that conversation. It seems like that's been sort of an organizing principle, or maybe a part of an organizing principle about, around why these albums are connected to each other. So when I went into this album, I was very much situating it in my mind as like the next stage of whatever Renaissance began, which you just so beautifully laid out and I agree with wholeheartedly. Just an absolutely stitched tight, detailed study in the history of dance music that at the same time felt incredibly ebullient, lighthearted, without ever losing its sort of cultural commentary and heft. It felt so intentional, like every single moment of it was there for a purpose and it was strung together, as you mentioned, as a DJ set. So it really felt like you really almost couldn't consume it as not one whole thing. Like it really felt like that was one of the greatest, I felt like, achievements of the record. And what's been so interesting to me over the last weekend is thinking about the ways that this album is like really quite different than Renaissance in so many ways. And I'm really happy, as you mentioned, Danielle, that she let us in on the fact that this was recorded first, because that actually helped me make sense of it in a way. It makes sense to me more as a sequel to Lemonade in some ways than it does as a sequel to Renaissance. You know, Renaissance was escapist, I think, in its core DNA. Like the idea of it was fantasy. The idea of it was Beyoncé, I think, putting down a lot of the concerns of her recent output, which had a lot to do with unpacking her own family and lineage and connecting that to broader stories of Black history, of American history, of the African diaspora, etc. That seems to have been like a lot of her project since, I think, mainly her visual album in 2013, but definitely since Lemonade. And I felt like, of course, built into Renaissance were those ideas, like they were there, but they didn't feel like they were as kind of like overtly centered or like they are so deeply in the text. There was more subtextual, I felt. felt. And this record to me feels very much like it is coming back to that self-interrogation, familial interrogation, American interrogation that feels very much sequential with Lemonade. And that took me a minute to like reorient myself back into like that version of Beyonce, especially because I felt like Texas Hold'em, the lead single, was like in the best way possible, like campy and like kind of actually like felt in conversation with Renaissance's like bigger, campier aesthetics and performative aesthetics. This ain't Texas. Ain't no Hold'em. It's taken me a minute, and I wonder how both of you feel about this, to kind of like reorient myself a little bit in the more kind of like stripped back and like autobiographical version of Beyonce music that this album, I feel like, is begging us to think about it as more so than Renaissance had. Not to mention the sprawl, I think, also being another part that sort of disconnects it from Renaissance. Like, Renaissance was a long album, but was very much like, as I mentioned, like a concise thing that you wanted to listen to in one go, whereas this feels like much more unwieldy and actually, like, I've personally found easier to consume in bites. I'm curious how that all lands with both of you.
Yeah, I completely agree with all that. And I've been calling it in my mind as I'm, like, trying to reckon with what this body of work is.
That was just a preview. If you want to hear the rest of that episode, plus weekly bonus episodes of the show and so much more bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/poppantheon. You can click the link in the show notes of this episode, or you can subscribe for the audio only of our bonus episodes directly in the Apple Podcasts app.